thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
How about...
Here's John Williams.
The big song in a minute. 108, this is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Sure glad you are there.
Lord have mercy.
I hope you stay here with us all the way until 3. I'd stick around after 3. Rokon, Anna DeVlantis, they do a pretty good show, too. This is WGN. On the one. Kim, I'm glad that you played Little Gym Neighbors back home in
and then
Indiana.
I realized I was doing the rest of my Gym Neighbors story, but forgot to turn my mic on. So if it sounded a little funny, I apologize.
You got so caught up in the reverie of
yes,
the music
I did.
That I think you were wistfully. We just got done recording our Mincing Rascals podcast. It's a weekly roundtable that Patty Vasquez joined us on this week.
Oh,
Steve Bertrand.
Fun.
Yeah, Patty's terrific, of course. And Eric Zorn and I were all sitting there yakking away about a bunch of local and national stories. And at the end, we all may give a recommendation. Well, in one of them, Steve Bertrand said, or was it Eric Zorn, said they want to recommend going back and watching Gomer Pyle, USMC, which is, you know, a silly, silly 1960s or 70s TV sitcom that he was in. And you remember from the Andy Griffith Show, too. And they said, you know, Back Home in Indiana, what a great song. And I said, I'm not so sure that Jim Nabors was a great singer. When I used to listen to him back then, he'd make an appearance on the Carol Burnett Show or something. And I for one thing, couldn't make the transition from him from silly goofball running a garage to him being a great singer. And, you know, it's such a big operatic voice. It just wasn't in
it
my...
It just doesn't look right coming out of him. You know, there's just some people that you're better off just to listen and not see their face.
Kind of, particularly since you already have sort of you already have a feeling about who this person is and what they're like. And so they were a little incongruous. And yet, as you were playing that song, I thought, damn, Jim, you could sing.
And that was from 2014. So that wasn't even
really?
That long ago. That was when
wow.
he was at the Indy. I found it on YouTube. That was when he was at the Indy 500 in 2014.
Do you have some of that? Can you play that again? Is it handy?
Actually, my computer just crashed. So
well, Ella found some of him, too. So let me play some of this. But I just wanted to hear it because I think that was remarkable for 2014. All right, Ella, a couple of cuts. Here's a little more Jim Nabors singing.
Row, row, row your boat gently
row,
down
row,
the stream.
Row your boat.
Oh, yeah. This is a duet with Carol Burnett, obviously.
Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Row your boat gently down the stream.
Row your boat gently
merrily, merrily, merrily,
merrily,
life is but a dream.
Merrily, merrily, life is but a dream.
Row your boat gently down the stream.
By the way, there was a day in your lifetime when this was the number one rated TV show in America.
Rare age, adore me.
I used to wince a little bit because Carol Burnett was never a great singer. Wonderful talent. We all love Carol Burnett.
I just saw her last year at the Chicago Theater. She was telling all her stories about the Carol Burnett Show. It was amazing.
Yeah, was she good?
Actually, I think she's coming back here.
Well, I noticed there was a TV commercial last night for a special of hers. I think that was a TV special.
It's going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Carol Burnett Show.
How about that?
Yeah.
And she was never a great singer, but she was such a terrific entertainer. And so she would do duets with a lot of her guests sometimes. Here's another Jim Nabors song. So this is him singing maybe more in the style you're used to.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling up the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed the faithful lightning.
So Jim Nabors has passed away, and if we listen to a little of that music today, that feels kind of good, doesn't it? On the entertainment beat for just a second, and then we got a lot of business to get to today. I've just been carrying this story around, and I'll mention it today because there's another movie story in the news today as well. Lady Bird has broken Rotten Tomatoes' record. It's the first time 100% of the reviews were positive. Greta Gerwig's directorial debut, 174 positive reviews and 0 negative reviews on the aggregate site as of Wednesday, anyway. This would have been last week. Lady Bird reviews have taken flight, earned the film a record-breaking 100. It announced Monday that the coming-of-age film surpassed Toy Story 2, the previous record holder of the most consecutive fresh reviews and 0 rotten reviews against it. Lady Bird garnered an impressive 164. Toy Story 2 had 163. I don't know who that one guy was or gal, but somebody gave Toy Story 2 a bad review. The film's number of positive reviews climbed to 174, et cetera, et cetera. It's a really good movie. Of course, I give it a positive review, but it's one of those movies, even though it's the best movie of the year, where you're going to go into it and be prepared to be a little disappointed. Because too often they do not live up to your expectation. I'm reading from the Tribune today. Steven Spielberg's newspaper drama, The Post, was named the year's best film by the National Board of Review, which lavished praise on its top actors, Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks plays Ben Bradley, and Meryl Streep plays Catherine Graham. What a great lineup that is. Jordan Peele's horror sensation Get Out took an award for the best ensemble as well as best directorial debut. Get Out is so good. And calling it a horror flick, it doesn't really do it justice. It is a different kind of movie. It is a thriller. It is a really good movie. Greta Gerwig's Lady Bird landed two awards, Best Directorial and Best Supporting Actress for Laurie Metcalf. Best Supporting Actor went to William Dafoe for The Florida Project. So a little news along those lines. Not that long ago, I was standing in line at the Jewel. I had to pick up some Heinz chili sauce for some chicken chili we were making, and a small jar of that is one of the ingredients. But anyway, there I was checking out, and I'm using my debit card, and they have that little thing that reminds you to cover your PIN number while you enter it. And I've always thought, oh, for goodness sakes, this is a bit much. You know, I mean, I know we should all be mindful of that, but what, is somebody going to be looking over my back while I do this? I'm not sure that anybody's going to get their pass number stolen this way. I figured it's more electronic or something. And I didn't cover my hand with it. So then, as I'm entering the last of the four digits, I look over and there's a guy very carefully watching me. He's the next guy in line. He's got on a hoodie or a knit cap, and he's got an iPhone in his hand, and the buds are disappearing under the hood or the hat. So he seems sort of preoccupied with his phone and maybe his music. But he's also looking at me, and I notice that while he's looking at me, he's also typing into his iPhone. So now I'm looking at him, and he's already looking at me. When my eyes come up from the pad, I look, and he sees that I'm looking at him, and I see that he's been watching me. And he's typing something into his phone. And he's got some sort of app up, and it's running. And I thought, if somebody was going to steal my ID, my passcode, my number, this is what it looks like. This is how you would do it. Look a little distracted with your phone, but also have your phone there, and you're entering as I do it, and maybe right now you're pulling money from my account. And I wanted to say something to him. I didn't know, and I did not. I didn't say anything to him. But I imagined it would have been something like, I'm sorry, could you tell me what you're doing there? Or, I'm sorry, but I think you're stealing my password. Can I read your phone and see what you're doing? I didn't know exactly what the best approach was. I also figured that I'd know soon enough if he was stealing from me. And if he was, my bank would cover it. Isn't that a terrible attitude? But I just didn't feel confident enough that he was doing what I thought he might be doing to approach him about it, per se. So I didn't. And I'm just wondering if anybody has ever been in this situation, either as the stealer or the stealee or the accuser or the accusee, because I'm not in the habit of doing that. But I swear to God, now I am more cognizant when I enter the numbers. I do kind of take a glance around. And I don't know if this is how it would happen anyway. My number is 312-981-7200. Have you been to this movie? 312-981-7200. Okay, what's that? Rose, you'll be my first call, and I want to hear from you as well. Call me or text me right now. If you're calling me at 312-981-7200, you're probably getting a busy signal right now. You can always text. We'll listen to your calls and take your texts. You ever thought that you were getting your password copied when you were punching in your numbers at an ATM or at a checkout? Hey, you can make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best. That's at 10 p.m. and then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago. That's at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. Remember now, Amida Health knows you best like no one else. The one that's there for you always. Lifelong bonds that make all of the difference. The one that knows what you need and when you need it, that's Amida Health. They always put you first. Amida Health includes 9 hospitals, 7 immediate care centers, 78 outpatient locations in the west and northwest suburbs. Visit amidahealth.org/YOU or call 855-MY-AMIDA in sickness and in health. Joanne, this is John. You're on WGN. What can you do for me? You're on the air.
Hi, are you looking to talk to Joni?
Oh, hi, Joni. That's you. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. You're on the air. What's up?
Thank you. That happened to me once, and that's exactly what happened, and that's exactly what they do. Everybody talks about the electronic ways they do that, which is another great way they do it, but and they steal it from people that work at places. They pay for the information, but that happened to me at a bank, as a matter of fact, at an ATM at a bank, and I knew the moment it was happening because, like confession, they were standing way too close.
Yeah.
And I just very calmly stepped away, didn't punch in that last number, and just walked away. And then I followed him out to his car.
Huh.
And I took a picture of the license plate.
Huh.
And then I walked up and knocked, and he rolled down the window, and I took a picture of him. And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "The exact same thing you were doing to me inside. I think I'll just keep this for posterity." And he looked at me and he said, "Fair enough." And that was that.
Really?
And I never, and nothing ever happened.
But that was his admitting to you, "Yeah, you got me."
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When you didn't punch in the last number, then he wasn't able to take the money. You didn't get your money then either, but that's okay.
Better I keep my money.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't need anybody else's money, but I need mine.
Well, you are a more courageous lady than a lot of us, my friend.
Well, as my daughter would say, I'm crazier than most.
Yeah, I know. Be careful.
You know, at this age, I don't care.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate you joining
us. Thank you.
Yeah, what a story. Line number 3, it looks like, is Rodney. This is John. You're on the air.
John, good afternoon. This is Rodney. I have an interesting story for you. My identity was stolen off my debit card, and I believe it was at a new retail store I'd been to that I had not visited before. What had happened is I realized that there was an unauthorized ATM withdrawal from another city. I don't know if I should mention the cities or not.
Doesn't matter, but I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was happening in Chicago. There was a ATM with unauthorized withdrawal from Glenview. Glenview said they don't work with that because it's unincorporated. Call the sheriff. Called up the sheriff. The sheriff sent me back to Chicago, fill out a police report. Chicago sent me back to Glenview. Glenview sent me back to Chicago. And Chicago sent me back to Glenview. And no one would take a police report, even though I have the exact location and time the withdrawal was done from an ATM without my authorization. It's amazing.
I get it, but I think most of us don't think of calling the cops. We just call our bank and have them fix it or credit our account or cancel the card, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But you wanted this guy captured, and I suppose they've got video of exactly when and where it happened because you could tell them, right?
Yes, I could, exactly, to the date and the hour. I'm reimbursed with the bank. That's fine. The bank did that to me. But if someone continues to do this, they're just going to get bolder and bolder and increase their crime. Damage to someone.
We all end up paying for it. I mean, you know, rates or fees or something goes up because people are stealing from people's accounts unauthorized. Wow. Huh. Yeah, it's interesting. Hey, Rodney, hang in there, man. Thanks for the call.
All right. Bye-bye.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? I wonder, I mean, it seems like a victimless crime in a way, right? Like if they steal money from you, somebody uses your, this happened to me in Atlanta, like I was in Chicago or Minneapolis, and I got a notice from the bank saying, did you just buy $400 worth of things at a Walmart in Atlanta? And I said, no, as it turns out, we didn't. They said, okay, we'll credit your account and cancel your card and get you a new one. So I was made whole. That guy got away with it. and the bank just ate it. I guess that's what happens. But in the long run, then, all of us either have poorer rates or higher fees. Somehow, somebody's making up that money, and I'm sure it's you and me. It makes you wonder, I wonder what the total, Steve, you don't happen to know this off the top of your head, do you? What is the total amount of money stolen from people's accounts using ATM fraud and theft?
I don't.
You don't have that?
It's about 2 gazillion, though.
I think it's 2 gazillion. Ella! We need to find out what's the total amount of money. No, she's writing this down.
And the thing is, like they were saying, I feel like they just don't even, not that they don't try to catch him, but that they're like, it's not going to happen.
Totally. I mean, my sister had, she was doing a Craigslist or eBay sort of exchange, and somebody came and ripped her completely off. And she went to the police. They go, yeah, there's a lot of that. That was,
right.
That was their answer. If somebody steals your cell phone, the cops are not going to bust their butt looking for it. Even if you've got the tracker that goes beep, 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 it's right there. Yeah, they don't want to do that. Ella, what is the total amount of money stolen from people's bank accounts using ATM fraud, where somebody steals your card or your number and they're just ripping you off? What is the total amount of money? Steve thinks it's 2 gazillion. I think that's high. Let's talk to Gina. Hey, Gina, this is John. You're on WGN. What can we do for you, Gina?
Hey, John, I want to second the idea about taking the person's picture. I think that can be intimidating and make them think twice. But the other point I want to make is, if you're down to your final digit of your passcode, you've basically given them your entire passcode.
That's right.
All they have to do is try
1 in 10
different versions.
Oh.
Exactly. So I would just change my passcode. That couldn't be too hard.
Well, who's to say that person didn't do that? Yeah, if that's your scheme, stop, walk away. You know, hit clear, clear, clear. But if nothing else, change your password as quick as you can. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, but that's the
easier
sort of
than going through all the grief.
I know that. And that's the sort of thing, though, where you say, hey, I'm going to take his picture, knock on his, roll down your window. Hey, buddy, I got you. You get your nose broke. Or worse, you know, if you do, that's kind of like, I'm not sure that's the best course to take. It worked for that lady, though, anyway.
Well, she may have been a little bit more aggressive than I might have been, or maybe someone else might have been. But if you theatrically kind of say, now let me get this photo, and just but you keep a good distance from the person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And very obviously use your finger to, you know, activate your phone and appear to be, or dialing 911. Now let's see, 911, and do it almost in a theatrical way.
Yeah, I am now calling the cops.
Yeah.
maybe that works, huh? Hey, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you jumping in there, Gina. Lots of calls about this. I was checking out at a grocery store, and I noticed somebody watching me dial in my 4-digit code. And I thought, oh, shoot.
You sure they just didn't want to make sure you got it right?
That's probably what it was. He went, oh, that's that doofus on the radio who gets stuff wrong all the time. I'll help him out here. It's 129. Steve's got the news next. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue here on WGN. You've seen the pictures and video of the volcano in Bali, which is bubbling up?
I think I have.
It looks positively prehistoric. It's a classic, you know, cone-shaped volcano, and at the top is a red plume of fire going up in the sky. I completely expect to see a Tyrannosaurus walk by the videos at any time. But no, it's people in Bali. And a lot of them are going, yeah, we're cool with this. I'm like, do you people not know what a volcano does? It goes kablooey. You're either going to get a river of molten lava come knocking on your door, or maybe ash, and you'll turn into those people at Vesuvius or Vesuvio, or that's a kind of chicken I'm thinking of. Anyway, Pompeii, those folks, it'll be really bad for you. And it's maybe like people who are in the path of a hurricane, and they say, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it could be bad, but maybe it won't be so bad. And so, and if I go, how long do I stay?
You know, did you have this living in Hawaii as a kid? Did you have, because we were just in Iceland, right, this year. And, you know, they do drills. The schools have volcano drills there and evacuation routes and all of that stuff.
I grew up in Hawaii, and our only meteorological fears were, boy, we did not have any. It didn't snow. It was always 70 degrees. The weather was a joke. Like, they would cut to weather. And now here's Biff with the forecast. He'd go, it's going to be sunny. Back to you. We didn't have anything. The weather was a non-factor.
No worries about the volcanoes.
Not worried about, because right. I was worried when we lived in Taiwan. I was told that it was an island. And I was just a little boy. I was in first grade. And we had a backyard. And I would like to go in the backyard and dig. We didn't have a lot to do because it was Taiwan. So I would go in the backyard with a spoon, and I wanted to dig a hole. But I always stopped when I got down just a little bit because I was afraid that the water was going to come through and I was going to sink the island.
They didn't tell you that if you could dig deep enough, you'd get to Manuka? And then you did.
So I wouldn't dig that deep down. No. I would just stay there. And it bothers me to this day because I would have had a lot of joy if I had been able to dig unfettered in the backyard. But I didn't think to ask my parents, and they never asked me, hey, John, why don't you go out and dig in the backyard? So I would just kind of go out and do it on my own. But I would always cut myself short because I thought it would be terrible if all of a sudden a geyser of water starts coming through.
You think you'd be a better person today if you were able to dig a little deeper, or maybe a more normal person?
I'm getting to an age now where I'm looking back on my life.
Mm-hmm.
From that moment to, I don't know, my wedding night. And there's a lot of things I think, boy, I would sure do that differently.
Yeah?
And when I go down that path, Brenda just kind of shoos me off. She just goes, don't do that.
You're not one of those people who say you wouldn't do a thing differently?
I would do a lot differently.
Right. I don't trust those people.
What do you mean?
The people would say, oh, I wouldn't do anything differently.
I know.
Come on.
Those are the same people that say, I don't need money. Money doesn't buy happiness. Oh, yes, it does, Margaret. You would be a lot happier with a lot more money. I have a lot of money. I would like even more money. I would be happier than I am now if I had even more money. And by a lot of money, I don't mean a lot of money, but I mean I got some money.
Well, how much?
I'm not going to tell you. By the way, speaking of numbers, we asked Elif. Elif, what is the total number of credit card theft in the country?
According to Forbes magazine, merchants in the United States lose approximately $190 billion a year to credit card fraud.
Wow.
Meanwhile, banks lose $11 billion and customers, 4.8.
What was that first number?
$190 billion.
$190 billion merchants lose because of credit card theft. So there I am punching in my four-digit passcode. The guy behind me is looking at me, and I'm thinking, doggone it, I think this is happening to me right now. But somebody texted me this. They said, John, what good's having the PIN number if he doesn't have your debit card number, too? Well, that's an interesting question. But another texter to 312-981-7200 said, John, the next step would probably have been for him to rob you, steal your credit card now that he has your debit card. So you're kind of vulnerable. He's not using this information any more than he's just going to record it and then steal your credit card.
Is this all
going
to happen in the Jewel?
Well, maybe it's going to happen in the parking lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
So
a guy's going to surreptitiously get your
he's watching me punch in my four numbers, right?
And then he's going to follow you out to your car, yeah. And then he's going to steal your card. No.
Sure. What's wrong with that scheme?
It's not going to happen. If he wants to do that, he's going to slug you until you give him the PIN number. He's going to take you to an ATM. He's not going to...
Oh, wait a minute. You want to have less work? If I'm a bad guy and I want to get money from this John fella, I'm going to steal his PIN number and then steal his credit card.
But to do
no
that,
punching is involved.
No, but to do that, then you have to rely on getting someone's PIN number and then following to the car. They got to be unmarried and childless and no dog in the car. There's too many things. That's not the way it was going to go. That's not it at all.
Huh.
What is your PIN number?
John, if you're going to Kmart, this texter says, they're now only taking cash and checks might work, and you can use your points. I work there. I know. For that reason?
No, wait a minute. That guy just said that Kmart won't take a credit card.
That's what it said. When's the last time you were at a Kmart or debit card? This texter says, Steve, I'm just reading them. What do you want me to provide accurate information?
Doesn't it matter if it's true, Sarah?
John, the truth of the matter is that while this story may not be true, the takeaway is we need to be cautious. Where is Sarah Sanders when I need her? I have a video of Muslims taking credit card numbers. John, the only reason why you didn't approach that person after you thought he stole your PIN number was perhaps, and possibly he was violating your security, is that you did not want to get beat up. Yeah, I didn't want to get beat up. I'm like, I don't think this is a fight I'm going to have. if you're criminal enough to steal my money, you might be criminal enough to break my nose. And while I am a strong and strapping man, I tend to hit like a girl.
What does that mean, John?
Oh, shoot. We can't say that anymore. Let's talk to, who's next here, Elif? Charles on line three. You're on WGN. Charles, what can I do for you?
Hi, John. So I actually work in the financial industries.
Hooray.
So I just wanted to clear a few things up.
Oh, no time for that.
The first one is that for like fraud and stuff like that, the majority of the times the banks actually take the money from the merchant and they'll just take the money back. So they're really not losing too much in that regard. But the customers are protected up to $250,000 by federal insurance and things along those lines.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. So somebody, and this has happened to a lot of us, this certainly happened to me, somebody was purchasing a whole bunch of stuff out of state with my credit card number. I don't know how they got it. And they had goods and supplies, I think, maybe it was denied at the point of purchase. It sounded like they were actually able to execute the sale. So then these people get a bunch of stuff, put it in their car, drive away. And then how does that happen? So then say that happens. Who's out, the store or the bank?
Most of the time it's the store that's out of the money.
The store, yeah. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what else are you going to tell me?
The other one was with the PIN. If you actually, most banks are like this. If you mess up the PIN three times, it'll automatically block your card.
Yeah, I know. That's happened to me, and I was the guy. It's my damn card.
Yeah, no, I get a lot of calls with people that are upset because they forgot their PIN, and it usually takes about a business day for it to get reset.
Yep.
Entirely.
Yep, yeah. I've been there, Bucky. But I guess that's better for days in. But I was literally on the road. I was in a hurry. I was on the way to my son's baseball game. I had to get some cash. I was actually in Georgia, now that I think about it. And so I run up to get the thing, and I use the wrong number. And I go, oh, crap, I didn't dial the number correctly. So I use the same wrong number again. And then I thought, well, that's weird. And now I did it very slowly and deliberately wrong. And then I went, oh, wait, I'm doing the other PIN. Well, by now I'd locked myself out of the account. This is what happens.
Yeah. A lot of people get upset. But there are, like, fraud monitoring systems that they monitor for any kind of red flag. So there are a lot of times where they'll catch it before the transaction goes through. But then there are a lot of times where they won't, where they'll test it out. They'll do, like, $1 or $2 at something really cheap to see if you notice.
Well,
along those lines.
What do you recommend a person do when they think that their PIN number is being stolen at a point of purchase?
If their PIN number is being stolen at the point of purchase, I would check with your financial institution. There are some where you can actually manually block your card from like a phone app. Some of them do that. Another one, you can actually change your PIN directly from the phone app. You change it right there and it'll change over after that. Or you can get an entirely new card. It's up to the customer at that point.
Yeah, hey, good deal, man. Where do you work? You want to give a plug for your financial institution there, Charlie?
Yeah, I work at a company called Lending Solutions. We assist with credit unions and banks across the entire country, like just call center stuff.
Sounds like they got good people at Lending Solutions. Thanks for your call, Charles.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
Yeah, you do too. It's 147 on WGN. This is John Williams. Let's do this.
It's your non sequitur of the day.
Hey, hey!
Come on, it's time to play. Non sequitur.
The mustard is horrendous.
The mustard is horrendous. The mustard is horrendous. That's our non sequitur of the day. This is a little game we play. It goes like this.
It's your non sequitur of the day.
We play a line.
Come on, it's time to play.
You have to tell us.
Non sequitur.
The mustard is horrendous.
The mustard is horrendous. In the last 48 hours, that sentence was uttered here on WGN Radio. The question for you is, who said it and what were they talking about? Who said it and what were they talking about? If you get that right, I've got a great prize for you. You need to call 312-981-7200 or text to 312-981-7200 and tell me who said the mustard is horrendous and why. All right, let's see here. Elif, where do we go for the non sequitur of the day? First, are you ready with the non sequitur, Elif?
The mustard is horrendous.
The mustard is horrendous. Is this Andrea? This is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. My name's Andrea. How are you?
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
All right. That's our non sequitur of the day. What was that all about?
That was Brent Sopel talking to Bill and Wendy about the color of the Nashville Predators' helmets.
He's good on the radio. I like listening to them.
Yeah, he's pretty funny.
Yeah, we're ripping on the what was the line again? Play it again, Elif.
The mustard is horrendous.
Mustard colored was the helmets, right?
Yeah, the helmets and the uniforms. He is ripping on the colors because they are pretty bad.
By the way, do you know what I have for you? I have a gift certificate to MJ Miller and Company in Barrington. It's a $100 value. I want you to go pick out something nice for yourself, or maybe use that as a start and get something even nicer. But you'll do well at MJ Miller with $100 in your pocket.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
They've got diamond stud earrings and brooches and all sorts of great gift ideas. MJ Miller and Company, we've got you started there, okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
That was your non sequitur of the day. For all the winners, I say hooray. Non sequitur.
There is video that I haven't been able to see, but I did. I finally found the video today. It's short. It's a clip. Have you seen the video? They have this war crimes trial that's going on in Europe.
The cocktail?
Yes. And one of the guys who was convicted of war crimes against humanity, et cetera, a former general who's been incarcerated, and this thing has been going on for years, is convicted. And he stands up and he says, I defy you, this isn't true. And then he has a shot glass, or a small clear glass, bigger than a shot, but smaller than a glass of water. And he's standing there with officials on either side of him. How this glass appeared in his hand, who knows? But he then takes a swig, sets it down, and says, that is poison. And then he dies. Rather than be incarcerated, he kills himself by drinking a glass of poison that he brought into the courtroom with him. It's the crazy. You cannot believe that happens. And he died, and they rushed everybody. The proceedings were interrupted, and they rushed the medics in, and they rushed to the hospital. He died. He killed himself. He said, you're not taking me alive, and killed himself right there on the spot by drinking some sort of poison. That sounds like the stuff in movies, but there's no poison that you can drink that fast and it just kills you like that. Where are you going to get that stuff? He had that stuff. That's what happened. There's a story in the news today and yesterday. The mayor wants us to have a high-speed rail line that would go from downtown Chicago to O'Hare Airport. And here's the numbers that matter to you. That the trip would take 20 minutes or less from, say, Union Station or somewhere downtown in the loop to O'Hare, 20 minutes. That there would be a fresh train every 15 minutes. And that the cost would be somewhere between $20 and $35 a trip. Also, the pledge is that it would be no tax dollars. It wouldn't cost the city or state anything. That we'll get Elon Musk or some Chinese banker. We'll get somebody to finance this thing. And the mayor wants the bids for proposal. He wants, not all the details, but he wants interested parties to alert the city to this by the middle of January. And the question is, would you be willing to spend $30 if you were guaranteed a 20-minute trip from downtown to O'Hare, or vice versa? I don't know how you say no to this. I mean, boy, if ever there was a slam dunk, this is it. There's some problems with this proposal. I want to bounce them off of you, but tell me, you can text right now. We're also going to talk to Mary Wisniewski, the transportation writer at the Chicago Tribune, in the next half hour to find out a little bit more about this.
But I think it was even $20, John, wasn't it? I mean, I guess it would have to be set by whoever makes it. But
I think you're right. I've heard $20, and then the premium service would be $25 to $35, where you get a baggage check and free Wi-Fi and stuff like that. You don't even need to have free Wi-Fi. You're only in the thing for 18 minutes. Boom. It really is only about an 18-minute trip. It's only about 18 miles from downtown to the airport anyway, but it'll take you an hour and a half. So you do a train, boom, you're there. And I want it underground, too. Anyway, Mary's going to say hi to us after the news. Tell me if you would spend, I'm going to make it $30 just to keep it interesting, Steve. Would you spend $30 one way? 312-981-7200. Text me your answer now.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Or
here's John Williams.
We get somebody else to do it. We got a good guest in the studio. It's 207. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan.
Lord have mercy.
Avenue. Sun is shining downtown. Blue skies here. What a lovely day. The Dow was up 339 points. We've been playing all day above 24K. Where are we now, Steve? 270-something?
273 at 24,213.
All of that because they now think that they're more confident that the tax bill is going to pass.
Looks like it. Senator McCain said he's an aye, and the Republicans have enough to pass it, yes.
All the smart people, though, I was reading Eric Zorn and talking to him about this bill, and he's against it, and all the economists he was talking to are against it and say it's not going to do what it says it's going to do. And the president has been saying things that are flat out not truthful about it. So if all of that is right, then why is it that the people who have the most skin in the game, the business sector, Wall Street, is cheering this on? They think it's a good thing. If it's going to be disastrous for this country, you'd think maybe the market would recoil a little bit.
Well, it's going to be good for business, and the corporate taxes will come down.
But that's a good thing for everybody, he said.
Well, it's good for it's a good thing for everybody if the businesses then use that money to research, do it in R&D, or perhaps increase worker pay or things like that.
Better wages.
But if they keep the money, if they do stock buybacks and do that sorts of stuff, those sorts of things won't help us as much.
And what do we think is going to happen in that case?
Well, Gary Cohn was at an event where someone asked for a show of hands with corporate leaders, how many of you are going to now use this money to invest in research and development things? And very few of them raised their hands, and he kind of made a joke. It's like, come on. That's what you're supposed to do. So,
yeah, even if you're not going to do it, raise your hand, damn it. We're trying to sell something here.
The cameras are here.
Well, I always thought that the market had factored in the tax plan, that the market has been so good lately because we thought health care will be fixed and markets and the tax plan will go through and that'll be good for business. And they were essentially betting on that. And that's why it was up high. Evidently not. But
well,
there's still a more of an upside.
I don't know if it's Goldman Sachs or someone said that if it goes through, the indices will probably go up another 10% next year.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
So there's two things. There's this hope of the
tax plan.
That ain't
going to happen. Go ahead.
But there's also business. It's been very good. The economy, the earnings reports have been overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, now, right.
You know, and we've talked about this is on the Mincing Rascals, too, where, you know, they argued that once business picks up and the job market heats up, the businesses will start paying their workers more, and that's the one thing that hasn't happened. So if you are a trickle-down advocate, that's an indication that it might not work out so well.
Bob Westrick is a friend of ours and talks finances with us a lot. He is one of the principals over at Private Vista. We do commercials for them. Before we did commercials for him, Bob used to just come on anyway. He's going to jump in here a little after 2:30 and talk to us about what he thinks is happening here and how optimistic is he.
Well, I'm glad he's not on now.
What do you mean by that?
Because I just told you my ideas, but he's the expert. So then he'd come right on and say, well, no, that's not true.
Well, actually, what you just heard from the news guys
is absolutely untrue.
A bunch of hoo-ha.
Right.
And our studio is also Mary Wisniewski, transportation writer for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on.
I was off a couple of days ago listening to this station, which I never do. I religiously don't listen to work when I'm not at work because then I find myself mentally working. But there I was listening to you talk to Rick Kogan about your book, Algren Alive. What a fascinating interview that was.
Oh, thanks so much. Rick is a fascinating guy, and so is Nelson Algren.
Well, the three of you, Rick, and Nelson, were having a great conversation. And if anybody could do that conversation well, it's him. And I haven't read the book, but I'm going to now. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah, I did not know about it. It came out last fall.
That's right, yeah.
And it's been going gangbusters.
It's been going well. It's the first biography of Algren for many, many years, and talks a lot about Chicago history and where he fits in and covering the underclass in this city.
What's the headline? Who is Nelson Algren?
Nelson Algren was, I think, the great Chicago writer who helped define how we see this city. He's also known for his longtime affair with French philosopher Simone de Beauvoir. and helped inspire her to write The Second Sex.
The response has been such that you now think you've got a second book.
Well, people keep contacting me to say, hey, I knew him, and we did this, and we played poker and whatever, so I can definitely have some more material here.
That was a fascinating part of the conversation. I'm now doing my Rick Hogan voice. He loved to play poker. He wasn't very good at it.
No, he was lousy. He had a terrible tell. His eyes would light up like headlamps.
I love that description. The Mayor Rahm Emanuel wants us to build a light rail, a direct. How would we describe the transportation vehicle from downtown Chicago to O'Hare?
It would depend on who built it. What he wants is a direct service that will go from downtown to O'Hare that would be there in about 20 minutes, which would be less than half the time that it takes now to go on the Blue Line, and a lot less time than it would take to go in a cab or an Uber, you know, during rush hour traffic. And yeah, it could be rail. It could be, you know, Elon Musk is expressing interest in this and talking about something called a hyperloop, which would involve magnets and a tube and some kind of vacuum-like technology.
Like so they use at banks?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, if you imagine yourself as a check, you know, just being, you know, shot over to O'Hare, that's pretty cool.
Okay, so these numbers are correct then? The idea is they want the trip to be from downtown Chicago to O'Hare, less than 20 minutes, with a train or something leaving every 15 minutes.
Right.
The cost is supposed to be 20, 30, 35 bucks at the most. Right.
They haven't set the
for
price
a one-way
yet,
trip.
But that would probably be where it would be at. That would be comparable to what it is in other cities that have this sort of thing.
And the hope is that it will not be any public dollars, it'll be private sector.
Right. They're stipulating that in their request for qualifications, which is kind of like a casting call for companies, that this has to be financed and paid for by the company that gets this contract.
Okay, so Toronto has one of these?
Toronto has one of these. The pricing didn't work out so well for Toronto. They started off charging about $21 in U.S. dollars to take this ride, and people weren't taking it, and they had to lower the price by quite a bit.
Yeah, so who cares? I mean, that's not my problem, and that's not the city's problem. So if a private investor miscalculates that, I don't think I care, as long as they still keep the trains running.
That would be their problem, but they would have to keep the trains running and make sure it's maintained. And this would be just an amazing thing to think about, because the routes they're talking about, like let's say you put it along the Blue Line. That's one possibility for the route. You couldn't actually put it on where the train tracks currently are. You'd have to put it under the ground, or you'd have to put it over the Blue Line or over the Kennedy Expressway. So this would be quite the feat of engineering.
Well, they did the Channel in Boston, right?
Right. And, you know, we reversed the flow of the Chicago River. We, you know, jacked up the city on jack screws back in the 19th century. So there's lots of cool little engineering things we can do if we think big.
Do you think this can happen?
I think that if we can find an investor, if the city can find an investor that is willing to put all this money into it and thinks they can make a profit of it, yes, of course it can happen. The problem is, can we find the person who can do it?
What's your answer to that?
We'll have to see. We'll have to see.
Is it an Elon Musk? Is it a Chinese banker I never heard of?
He certainly is. He's expressing interest in it. And other, you know, it has worked out in other cities. Tokyo has one. London has one. One thing that Chicago's always had an advantage of is a lot of other cities don't have what we have already. We already have the Blue Line, and we already have the Orange Line, which gets people to the airport faster than you could by traffic. The problem with those is what business people have told me is that if you're a high-flying jet setter from London or New York or wherever, and you're coming in on your $1,000 prepaid flight, you don't want to get on the Blue Line. You don't know where it goes. You don't understand the stops. You don't know where to put your luggage. You know, you're coming in, you're tired. You want to go to someplace that says train, and you want to get on, and you don't want to have to fuss, and you don't want to have to, you know, mix with the hoi polloi. You want to get to your place fast.
I think you're really right about that. And it's all anecdotal, but my nephews flew into Chicago recently, and my brother, their dad was with me, and the kids are coming in. They're young adults. They're in their early 20s. One of them is, and they didn't know how to do it. And my brother wasn't entirely comfortable saying, well, just go to here and do that. So, you know, they either end up Ubering or cabbing, or we got to drive out and get them. And the Blue Line is right there. Actually, I think this was Midway, but it would have been the same thing. They could have taken that. But that did not happen. That did not happen. But if there was a thing, and everybody was saying the tube is there.
Right.
And it doesn't make a stop every 8 blocks.
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah.
You know, the question is, and the thing that one assumes the city has been looking at, is will they get enough people to use this? Because if you're, you know, if you're a Chicago person and you work at O'Hare as a flight, attendant or something like that, you're not going to use this. You're not going to pay $25. You're going to get on the Blue Line.
Well, what's the cost? What would the cost of a ride be?
Well, if it, you know, say it's $25. You know, that's, it's the only people who would be using this are people who would be strangers to the city, business travelers. It wouldn't be the regular people of Chicago, mostly. And so they'd have to figure we have to have enough of those kind of people to use this. The city thinks yes, because, you know, O'Hare is a huge airport. It's a huge part of the hub in the country and in the world, and it's going to get bigger. So they think there's going to be enough people who want to use this.
Well, business people coming and going, tourists coming and going. Mm-hmm. People from Minnesota that want to go to the Vikings game are going to fly into O'Hare, and then they want to get downtown.
Right. Boom. So all of those people are a potential audience.
And maybe people who, I don't know where you live, but maybe you would calculate that either you live downtown or you live close enough to downtown that it would make more sense to get to Union Station, get on the tube, and then take it out that way.
Right. Yeah, you could decide to do it that way. And if the price point was low enough to make it attractive for those kind of people, and but also, you know, high enough to make a profit, you know, and then you could find your sweet spot and this could work. Yeah. This wouldn't happen for a while, though. You know, the mayor said early this year that he wanted, he had a three-year plan. And that's three-year plan for breaking ground, not three-year plan for cutting a ribbon. So it's going to be a long time, and they're going to have to figure out how to, and it's going to be expensive.
I only want the tunnel version. I don't want the thing over the tracks.
You don't want the thing over the track?
Well, because I think that would screw up life all the way up that corridor.
And it would be, the tunnel version, though, is the expensive version.
Yeah.
One industry person I talked to said that it's going to be, you know, could be $1 billion to $3 billion, and the $3 billion price mark would be closer to if you did an underground.
Yeah, okay, so let's do that. And then say over 30 years, you'd need to make $300 million. I'm doing the math in my head here. You make $100 million a year for 30 years, you get to $3 billion. $100 million a year for 30 years. You're not going to get $100 million a year in fares and advertising out of that.
It's a big reach. You'd also have to, you really may have to make a huge advertising push, too, to make sure that people know that this was an alternative.
Hold on a second. I'm dividing $3 billion by 30 years. Is that $10 million? 30 times 10. It's $10 million. Still,
yeah.
I'm not sure you're going to make $10 million a year in profit.
You know, so someone's got to figure that they're going to be able to make this work. And it's a big risk. And imagine the upheaval that you would have, you know, that you would have to take if you wanted to build something underground all the way to O'Hare Airport. You know, it's really interesting. And, you know, they tried to do this before, and they poured $250 million into the ground, and it went away.
There's this vacant station underground. Where is it? By Block 30?
By Block 37, and Mayor Emanuel held his press conference there.
I know. Well, what do you think of the optics of that? Maybe it's a good thing. Hey,
it's kind of gutsy. You know, it's like, hey, we the city screwed this up 10 years ago, and now we're going to get it right.
Really? Did we spend $200 million for that empty spot?
$250
million. And how is it used now?
It's not used, basically.
It's an empty,
the CTA might use it for something, you know, for, you know,
that's
something
amazing.
That they're,
yeah,
but
what a waste.
But we're not, no one's down there unless you're doing a press conference.
it's a site for future press conferences at $250 million. What a roll of the dice that was. Okay, so I think the question is, and by the way, it would be nice if we ran one tube up to Evanston and one tube to Joliet.
Just for you.
Well, no, but really, I mean, the problem is this really is only helping people that are coming downtown.
Right.
Most of our listeners are not downtown. Most of your readers are not downtown.
Right.
So maybe it'd be nice if it went to where the people live, hubs in Naperville and things like that.
And just add another $3 billion every place you want to go.
I know. Well, do you think that's the best direction, though? O'Hare to downtown as opposed to O'Hare to a suburb?
Oh, I think that's the only way it would be feasible at all.
Yeah, okay. So then the price, so I just want your answer to this question. 312-981-7200. I said $30. I'm going to leave it at 30. I mean, who are we kidding here? Let's make it 30. Would you be willing to spend $30 for a one-way trip from downtown to O'Hare or O'Hare to downtown? $30 is the price. The correct answer is yes, by the way. If you're going to do it at all, it's going to cost you at least $20 already anyway, and that's going to be in traffic. You don't want that. I don't know why I care, but it just seems to me like if these numbers are even close to being right, it's an easy one. Mary Wisniewski, transportation writer, Chicago Tribune's here talking to us about some sort of, I've been calling it tube. What do you call it?
It could be a tube. It could be rails. It could be, well, what they want is an express train of some kind that would take you from O'Hare to downtown in 20 minutes and back.
What price would you pay? I would pay $25. I would pay $30. Let's go to John on line 4. You're on WGN. John, you're on the air. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll get to you, John. I've punched up Joe, so Joe, you go first. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I just had a brainstorm. You know, the loop to O'Hare is only 18 miles. If a existing train goes 60 miles an hour, it'll be there in 20 minutes.
Yep.
And it only costs about $3 now.
$3?
Well, that's what it is for the L from O'Hare to...
Yeah, but the L's about a half an hour one way. More than that.
It's 45 minutes.
That's because it's stopping. I'm suggesting use the infrastructure we already have because it's only 60 miles an hour if you want to get downtown in 20 minutes.
No, I get your point. Let's let her comment on that. Is there a way they could take one of the lines and do that?
The problem is all the blue line traffic that's out there already. They would have to interfere with that. And, you know, you it would interfere with the frequency that the mayor wants. He wants to have this service every 15 minutes. And you would have to free up the L tracks for every 15 minutes. It would have to be an express train to go downtown.
How does that work? All the lines have two tracks, one going north, one going north,
one going south,
east
right.
and west.
Yeah, so they would have to. It would be very difficult to have the kind of frequency that the mayor wants.
Thanks for the phone call. I like your thinking. Dennis, you're on WGN. What did you want to say, Dennis? You're on the air. Hold on a second, Dennis. There you are. Dennis, you're on the air. What's up?
Yeah, it's not rocket science. Yeah, there's a couple solutions. One is you can put double tracks on both sides of the blue line, just take out the emergency lines and run the set of tracks on both sides. And that would get you there in maybe even 15 minutes. However, somebody needs to do a time and motion study on there. There's a point of diminishing returns. What about the people that get on to go to O'Hare at Irving Park Road? Are they going to come back to Chicago? The points on there and then go back out to O'Hare? So you got a very few people that's going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. What's your thought about that?
It would be you'd have to take out at least one lane, maybe two lanes of the Kennedy Expressway in order to get those extra lanes in there if you want them to run on the same level. And Kennedy's already pretty backed up, so that might be a tough sell.
Kennedy needs a subterranean highway. I'm not kidding. I mean, there's just Kennedy. John, this is all pointless. In 5 years, we'll be flying around in pods anyway. John, they need to find a better way to get to the suburbs to the airports. As you mentioned, residents of the city already have a way. John, I'm an Uber driver, and the one problem with this idea is that not everybody who flies into O'Hare goes downtown. Many of them go to other areas or suburbs. I don't think they'll get the ridership to support it. Yeah, that's a concern. That's the gamble. But I mean, here's my deal. And again, I'm only interested in the tunnel version because then I think it would be less disruptive. If somebody wants to take a gamble and figure they can make money on it, let the private sector do it, and it doesn't disturb us. Am I missing something here? What's the problem?
I think the one thing that we have to watch as a city is to make sure that it does stay privately funded. That the city doesn't put too much skin into this.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think they'll get halfway through and go, hey, listen, we need a little something in the next. I mean, who knows what the landscape will be, but I could just see us getting hoodwinked into buying into something we didn't want to get in.
You learn to be a little cynical living here, so you have to, watch it.
Read Mary Wisniewski in the Chicago Tribune, and also, it's not too late to get Algren a life, as you heard her talk with our Rick Hogan. Came out last fall, but it's still in bookstores, available online. It's a wonderful read about a great Chicagoan. It's a story of a man and a lot about our city, too.
That's right. A lot of history in it.
Is what it sounds like. I haven't read the book yet, Mary, but I'm so glad you had time with Rick on this plot. And there's a good Christmas gift idea for folks as well. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, John.
Mary Wisniewski writes for the Chicago Tribune. What is December 21st, the shortest day of the year? Are you amazed at how dark it gets so early now?
Well, you shouldn't be because
it happens every year. I know, but
it is true. Like even driving home yesterday.
4 o'clock and it's dark outside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. By the way, we were talking about that high-speed rail or however they would do it from downtown to O'Hare. Lots and lots of texts about that. John, I would take a tube to Ordway, O-R-D, Ordway's a theater, to O'Hare or Midway in a heartbeat from Naperville. It currently costs me $75. One way for a limo and $45 one way for a cab.
I didn't hear what you said to Mary. So would the L service be gone? Because that is a good point.
The L service would stay, and it would either be above or below it. If they mirrored the blue line, they might not even do that.
But, I mean, you could still, like, get on at Irving Park and take the L to O'Hare.
L service would not be interrupted.
Okay.
John, yes, I would spend $30 because if I just arrived at O'Hare and have a business meeting downtown, I can have a solid 20 minutes of prep time on a train while checking my email. Or you could have about an hour and take the L. 40. I think she said 48 minutes is the average.
There's a lot of lurching.
Blue. Yeah, it's not. And by the way, you may be standing. John, every hour on the hour, the CTA could run a nonstop train from downtown to O'Hare, charge $10. It would do the same thing. This one says, John, I pay about $30 or $40 each way from Glen Ellen to O'Hare in an American taxi, though it's the same when my husband and I are both traveling. That's an interesting point. I'm all about this, too, because it costs, say, $30 one way. But then if you have a spouse and two kids, just say, you come into the city, well, that's four times the $30. That's $120 for you all to get downtown.
You got to make them pay.
You all get into a cab. Now, there'd be an upcharge, but it wouldn't be 100% a person. Thanks for your thoughts about that. And if it's any consolation to those of you who are naysayers, it's probably never going to happen.
Well, don't say that, naysayer.
That is a naysay, but it's not going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen. Actually.
Hey, listen, I'm like you. What did you say? Dream no small plans?
No, but make no little plans.
Make no little
plans. Daniel Burnham's what he said.
Yeah. So let's keep that kind of thing going forward.
When's the last time we did something big here? Millennium Park?
Yeah. And what?
How'd that work?
Well, enormous cost overruns. Largely picked up by the private sector, and it took more time than we thought because of the cost overruns, because it got more ambitious as it went on. For instance, the fountain with the obelisks, whatever the heck that is, that was not in the original plan.
Yeah, but it's really nice now.
It's amazing. When people come to Chicago and they say, what are we going to do? I say, if you only do one thing and you're staying downtown, you don't know what to do, just go over to Millennium Park. I think it's the jewel of this city.
See?
290-something the Dow is up. We're above 24K, kids. I reached out. Should we do this first, Elif? All right, I've got a guest on to talk just a little bit about what's going on. But before we do that...
What do you want me to say? No?
It's my virtual kettle.
I like that.
At the Salvation Army. If you just go to my Facebook page, it's usually the first or second thing on my Facebook page. I'm King John. And there's a picture of me ringing the virtual kettle bell for the Salvation Army. We're trying to get to $10,000, and we go in fits and starts. Elif, where are we on our virtual kettle?
Your red kettle goal is $10,000. So far, you have earned $2,325 in donations to Salvation Army. That's 23% of your goal.
23. I don't know how much you can give, if it's a little bit or if it's a lot. You can donate anonymously. You can have your name appear in a scroll on the page. Just go to King John on Facebook, and there will be a link. Speaking of money, Bob Westrick is a partner at Private Vista. We talk about this company a lot, but before we even... Hey, Bob, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Get me out of this sentence. We talk about Private Vista a lot because I do commercials for you guys. But before I did commercials for you guys, I used to put you on all of the time. I think it was about 100 times you appeared on this radio station as a financial expert. And I'm calling you today not to do a commercial, but to tell me, why is the Dow almost 300 points up today?
John, I think the main reason is tax reform. John McCain said he'd support the tax cut that Republicans are advancing in the Senate. They're going to vote on tonight, and it looks like they got the votes. And that tax reform is probably the number one reason, because financial stocks are leading the rally, and banks are going to see a large positive impact from corporate tax cuts because they pay, on a relative basis, pretty high tax rates.
But the market's been up some. Go ahead, finish that.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, the other thing today that happened, too, is OPEC and some non-OPEC allies, the biggest one being Russia, agreed to extend some production cuts through 2018. So energy shares are doing pretty well, too. And retail's doing pretty well, too, on increased consumer spending and consumer income reports.
Well, isn't that what's been driving the market? What do you think has been the single biggest factor for the market, just the market? Has it been the Trump administration and the promise of tax cuts, or has it just been that companies are actually in a pretty good position right now?
Well, it's both. I mean, it, for one thing, right now, there's a coordinated global recovery. It's just not the U.S. You know, Asia's doing well. Europe's doing well. And the prospects of tax cuts have certainly, you know, made people a bit euphoric because, you know, there's a lot of segments of the economy that, that companies are just going to be more profitable because yeah. they're paying less taxes.
But I thought that the market had already factored that in. I thought that the market was up in part in anticipation of tax cuts.
And I agree with you. I think it was up, but now it looks like as it's going to really probably or potentially happen, or it's becoming more probable that it's going to happen, more and more people are jumping in on this rally. And once again, John, corporate earnings have been pretty solid, you know, and things are all moving in the right direction. Inflation's low. Unemployment is low. Right now, we're kind of hitting on all cylinders.
You know, it's weird is that, I mean, just because it's good for the markets doesn't mean it's good for every man, woman, and child in America, the president's tax plan. A rising Dow is good for everybody. Rising NASDAQ is good for everybody. But the president's tax plan, even though it may pass, might not be good for everybody. And my logic problem with this is, you know, what do I care about the tax plan except that I want it to be good for me and I want it to be good for America? Or, you know, give and take on each of those. Maybe it's not going to be perfect for America or perfect for me, but I want it to be as good as it can be. My problem is that I don't like or trust the president. And so if it's his plan, I have a predisposition to not like the president's plan. But maybe that's a stupid way to go about it. Maybe the president you don't like has a plan that will be good for America. And it looks like the Wall Street is telling me that this is going to be good for at least businesses in America, and that has to be good for me on some level. I'm not a big believer in trickle down, but I should at least be willing to champion something that's good for businesses in America. So I'm struggling with this, Bob. The economists are telling me that there's a lot of misinformation in the president's delivery and that it's not going to be good for the average American, but Wall Street is saying something else.
Well, John, I mean, there's two different and distinct plans going on there. And one, you know, one's corporate tax cuts and one's individual tax cuts. And so you almost have to talk about them separately, the pros and cons of them. On the corporate side, I mean, right now the corporate tax rates for, you know, U.S. domestic corporations are like the highest in the industrialized
yeah,
world.
But how many people pay that? How many people pay that, Bob? I hear that all the time. But really, are companies left and right really paying that much in taxes?
Well, John, there's a lot of headliners like General Electric doesn't and everything, but companies, you know, smaller companies, most smaller companies, yes, they do. But, you know, what gets the headlines are the companies who have got, you know, the barrage of lawyers, tax lawyers and stuff that can find the loopholes to get through it. But that's not really what's going on. There's thousands and thousands of companies that actually do pay, you know, high tax rates. And so when the, you know, politicians complain that, oh, my gosh, so-and-so, you know, company wants to leave the U.S. and domicile in Ireland or somewhere overseas, it's really Congress's own fault. I mean, you're forcing them as fiduciaries of their companies, CEOs, to move overseas because, you know, the rates are, it's just more profitable for their investors to be domiciled over there than over here. So I think Congress is actually doing something right now to make U.S. domestic corporations more competitive in the global marketplace.
So if you had to say why is the market moving up today, it's probably anticipation of this tax bill. It looks more probable now than it did yesterday. It's been up over 300. It's up just under 300 now. And how about them apples? All right, Bob Westry.
It's up 335 right now, actually.
Oh, no kidding. We're having a little sprint to the finish here, huh?
We are. And just in terms of some people don't really understand, this is an absolute number. That's 1.4%. So just to put it in terms maybe, you know, folks who don't really understand the magnitude of the numbers of the Dow, 1.4%.
Okay, Bob, over at Private Vista, you want to talk to these people about your personal stuff? Visit myprivatevista.com, myprivatevista.com. That's Bob Westrick, one of the partners over there. Nice to talk to you, Bob.
Thanks, John. Good talking to you, too.
We have the Hallmark Channel on about 24/7 at our house right now. There's now two Hallmark Channels. One is the traditional, I believe, Hallmark Christmas movies with the cotton snow. And then with slightly more production values, a little more cotton snow, they have another channel where they do some maybe more mystery I think that's what it is, Christmas movies. Anyway, they got a whole bunch of them, and they're fun to watch. It's kind of like instead of having the TV fireplace on, you can just have a Hallmark movie on, and every now and then there's a little Christmas music, and there's some snow generally in a fire, and Lord knows there are sweaters. And so it's just kind of nice to have on in the background. You can find your perfect Christmas tree at American Sale and save up to 50%. Trees as low as $79. You stroll through their Christmas forest and you choose from hundreds of trees ready to take home. Even hard to find 9 and 12 foot trees. Premium trees with the highest quality and value. You'll find lights, ornaments, outdoor decor, and much more. Find your perfect Christmas tree and decor with the lowest price guaranteed at American Sale. 9 Chicagoland locations. Or visit AmericanSale.com. American Sale, bring the fun home. John Williams, this text is just poured in. Face it, even though you're a Trump hater, and I don't particularly like him either, but our economy is doing much better because of him. Accept it. Oh, I do not. I absolutely do not. The economy is doing great, and I think that's what's kept him in office. If the economy were bad, he would have been gone a long time ago. Why is the economy good? Maybe because Trump is in office. He tweeted today that if a Democrat were in office, you know who, that it would be down 50% instead of up as high as it is. I don't know. The experts I've heard have said that it's not because of, I mean, really, why is Donald Trump being the president making the economy good or markets better? Is it because of a healthcare turnaround? That didn't happen. Is it because of a tax bill? We don't have that yet. We might. But what's got us to where we are today, my understanding is corporate earnings, low interest rates, things like that, things that the president didn't do. So he's the president. I can't fix that. But and I know the president has to sort of bear the economy. If it's good, they get credit. If it's bad, they don't. But do you want to try and convince me that this is all because of Donald Trump? You better work a lot harder than that. By the way, there's also this story in the news today. Longtime news anchor and host of the Today Show, Matt Lauer, has been fired from NBC for allegedly engaging in multiple instances of sexual harassment. Now, many have serious doubts about an upcoming high-profile project he was associated with. This begs the question, is the Harvey Weinstein-Matt Lauer biopic starring Louis C.K. in trouble? According to those close to the matter, Lauer's harassment allegations are presenting some serious hurdles for the film titled American Newsman, The Matt Lauer Story, which was co-directed by Brett Ratner and Roman Polanski and written by Woody Allen. Despite receiving early praise and a profile done by PBS's Charlie Rose, the Weinstein Company's decision to push the release date back to spring only indicates the film, which also stars Kevin Spacey as Today's Show co-host Billy Bush, may never actually see the light of day. To boot, all plans for an awards season promotional campaign headed by Bob Weinstein have reportedly been scrapped. Yikes, talk about a perfect storm of bad timing. Plus, with several of the movie's supporting actors, Jeffrey Tambor, Jeremy Piven, and Richard Dreyfuss distancing themselves from the project, it appears doomed. Ro and Anna are in the studio. I was just talking to Violetta off the air, you guys, about the Hallmark Channel movies. Violetta's a fan.
She loves them.
My family's a fan.
My family members are super fans, too.
It's just kind of nice. It just kind of cuts the tension in the room.
Well, around this time of year, they have so many sweet Christmas specials. They do get into it this month.
They are so damn cheesy. I just wanted to spend...
So. This is why I'm single, by the way. After years of being in relationships and having to watch the Hallmark Channel...
Can't tolerate it.
Or the Lifetime Movie Channel, I'm done. I'm out.
Can you do Bravo?
How about the Scorned Lovers series when it's all the wives that killed their husbands?
Yeah, well, that's your that's your Lifetime movie network right there. That's it. The Burning Bed all started with that.
But Kurt Peterson?
Can I make a suggestion? Maybe there's a Hallmark Christmas movie about the surly, acerbic,
crusty but benign
talk show host who finds love and Christmas.
Right, and then can start watching Hallmark shows. Yeah,
they could even like have it within a.
Like he softens.
But
I know,
then you
yes.
would lose your edge on air.
No, everyone knows.
Oh, that would be part of the movie. But then he goes, but then I'll lose my edge.
Ro is a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of,
I am.
Is Ro.
I am right before the opening scene where he gets murdered. Yeah, I'm right about there.
I want a Christmas movie, and he'd be worried that he'd lose his crusty edge, but then he would find the spirit of Christmas.
Yes, that's a good
ratings
I like that
and revenue would go
line.
Up, and the general manager would say, "Ro, will you please light the tree at the end of the movie?"
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's going to happen. yeah. And, you know, I just, the thing is, I like Bravo, I could do a little bit of Bravo. Yeah. I could do a little bit. I could do, you know, if I start on the Kardashians, I'll finish. You know, it's like, yeah. I'll start to watch
it's
that.
It's hard to look away.
So, right. It's really? One of those things, but I don't ever want to get sucked into it.
I've never watched a whole episode of a Kardashian. Yeah.
Real Housewives? Gotten into those?
No,
at all?
No, I can't.
I can't watch that either.
You can hear your brain cells jumping off of bridges.
But don't you need that sometimes in this day and age? I mean, isn't that what that's about?
I get that programming. But I would feel bad for myself if I watched some of that stuff.
I have often been the guy who is brought into the dinner with all of the Real Housewives, right? And it's the one guy that they're bringing to dinner. And, and then all of a sudden.
It's okay. We can talk in front of Roe.
Right. And then they start. And then a fight breaks out at the table, and then there's all of a sudden there's someone says something sideways, and they show just these reaction shots of these women sucking in their cheeks and looking at their goblet of wine. I mean, it's like I've been there, and I'm like,
I've been to those dinners.
I've lived that. I don't need to watch it on TV.
Like I said, a Lifetime movie.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, he's going to do a radio show with Anna DeVlantis. Have a good one, kids.
Thank you very much, John. Brett Baer's here, and Tom Skilling in the first hour, and then. An interesting conversation with Walter Jacobson, our own Walter Jacobson, about something that's just happened in the world of smoking.